Relation here with two possibilities. I think you're down to the last one tomorrow. It's going to be very interesting to see how it turns out. Far be it from me to presume to tell you how to do it. Wouldn't make any difference anyway, would it, Craig? Yesterday I talked about television and the effect that it has on me from time to time, and the business of Coral watching television over Brian, you know. We had an excellent illustration of that last night, an excellent illustration of it. I said to everybody, all and sundry, no, tonight I'm too tired. I've got to prepare for tomorrow. I'm going to bed tonight. And I went up and I resolutely walked past the coffee. Said, no, I'm going to have a drink. I'll go back and have a drink. And then I turned after having put my cup on the sideboard there, and I said, I'm going to bed. This is it. And I walked to the bottom of the stairs, and I heard some laughter in the corner. So I turned and I went back. And I stood there and I watched it, and it had exactly the same effect on me as television. I don't think, in all honesty, that it was such a bad influence, but it seemed to be motivated by a similar kind of thing. There was the violence, and there was the aggression, and there was... You know what I'm talking about. Interesting, though, that this is the way in which ecclesial life works out, isn't it? And we had, in spite of the fact that it was indeed a very much a trivial pursuit that we were engaged in last night, it was a marvellous illustration of the way in which ecclesia can work together, isn't it? And tremendous, really. I mean, for all that I've said about it, I really enjoyed it. It was tremendous. So we turn our attention to thinking about the ecclesia and focusing on the truth in the ecclesia. And once again, I'm not particularly well qualified to do this, number one. Number two, I'm not going to have time to talk about half the things that I thought about anyway. We're just going to pick on a few things. First of all, key passages, as we've had in the past. One of them taken from the reading, which we just had. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Coral, I wonder if you'd mind looking in my bag in the front portion there, in a little pocket. There is a little pointer, which I would appreciate. Thank you. And you see here that... we have to consider how we are to stir up one another to love and to good works. And this means that we have a mutual concern for each other, doesn't it? And that we are going to think of others before we think of ourselves. That bag is rather interesting. Paul, would you like to bring me the bag and I can find it in about a second and a half? No, that's fine. Thanks, John. No, I'm fine. Thank you. You can lift it?
Yeah.
Ah, it's a weighty bag. It is there, at least it was. Yeah, look at that. You see, how long did that take? Thank you. Well, you know, this business with husbands and wives, it takes a little while to get them in training, doesn't it? Right. Now, getting back to our subject, notice also that it is the habit of some to neglect to meet together. And there are those who say that they can be just as spiritual. Instead of going to a meeting on a Sunday morning, they get just as much out of going out on their boat and, go fishing or whatever it is that they want to do. Or to get up on a mountaintop, and they get just as much out of that. Yeah, but that's not what it's about. It is a question of how much you put into it. And when you're up on top of a mountain, you're not actually helping your brethren all that much, are you? It may be also, tremendously edifying for you. Actually, I kind of doubt it. I think there is a limit to that. I don't think that it is actually as edifying as it is made out to be. But perhaps I'm not particularly well qualified to say, because I haven't actually engaged in that activity a great deal. It seems to me that we need to start by getting the spirit of what this is about. You see, I guess we've all had this experience. A brother says to me at the end of the meeting, I didn't get one thing out of that meeting. Now, I don't know why I'm here.
I know what I'm doing here. What a waste of time. He didn't get anything out of the meeting because he didn't put anything into it. He didn't bring anything to the meeting, and he didn't put anything into it while he was there. Now, you don't put anything in, you're not going to get anything out. It's a very simple proposition. Yeah, everybody knows that, and we know that, but we've actually got to think about this a little bit. And if we start thinking that the ecclesia is not doing its thing for us, the chances are pretty good we're not doing our thing for the ecclesia. Right? Simple. And something to keep in the back of our heads all the time, as it seems to me. And the other thing that I think is helpful on the slide, which is in front of us, where two or three are gathered together in my name, said the Lord, I'm there too. And that should make us think a little bit about a whole lot of things, as a matter of fact. But one of the things about which it ought to make us think is the spirit with which we approach it. And I'm going to talk about that perhaps a little more later on. But the way in which we come in, you know, we are a close family, and it is great that we are as friendly and as close and as chatty as we are. But there is a point at which at the morning meeting, and this is probably more of a problem for smaller meetings than for larger meetings, there is a point in which it all becomes just a little bit too laid back and just a little bit too, well, verging on irreverent, if you know what I mean. And I think that there's just got to be a balance in that. And it's a very fine balance, and not an easy balance to find. There are those who say we should have everything worked out, and you do exactly this, that, and the next thing, you know, and you have a sort of a grim and quiet and subdued spirit, and you come in like this. And there are others who are completely the other way around. I don't think either of those extremes is satisfactory, and I think that one of the challenges that is before us is to find that balance. And we find it, I think, by just reflecting on the fact that where two or three are met together, then the Lord is in the midst. And the question is, how would we behave if he were there in the sense that we could see him? All right, so there's a bit of a question there. What it all comes down to is a question of attitude. As in so many things in life, it seems, in my opinion, to be a question of attitude. And you will find that the scriptures have a great deal to say about the attitude that brethren and sisters ought to have towards each other, towards their association. I've got two or three which will fit on one slide, but I've got a couple of pages of them in my notes that I've transcribed. Let's therefore celebrate the festival, and the context is in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, is taken from the Last Supper, you know, our memorial meeting. Let us therefore celebrate the festival, not with the old leaven, the leaven of malice and evil, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Now, this is based on the similarity between the Last Supper and the Passover meal that the Jews kept. You know, the Jews had actually two components to their festival. They had the body of the lamb, which could have been a goat, incidentally, and they had the blood of the lamb. Right? And these represented the body of the Lord Jesus Christ and his blood. And we have the counterparts in our memorial, the bread and the wine. The bread for the body, the wine for the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's just carried right through by a double parallel. It's obvious, isn't it? But the fact is that when the Passover was kept in Israel, it was kept in conjunction with the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Not that it was actually a part of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but just the timing of the events, because the Feast of Unleavened Bread began on the 15th, and the Passover meal slain as the 14th ended and eaten when the 15th began. So it was eaten in conjunction with the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at which, of course, they had unleavened bread on the table. And so the apostle picks up that extra element and says there is something else to go with this. It isn't just a matter of taking of the bread and the wine. It isn't just a question. In fact, there is a bit of a danger in even in Christadelphian circles that we think of the bread and the wine as sacraments in the sense of the Roman Catholic Church, that in some sense you are made more holy by taking of bread and wine. And that isn't true. They are reminders, they are memorials. Their function is to focus our minds on the Lord Jesus Christ, who is in our midst at that time. He is in our midst, actually, a lot more than perhaps we are willing to acknowledge. And when we do that, then, we, like the Jews, have adjuncts to our worship, and the adjunct is, for the Jew, the unleavened bread. That was a physical thing. Now what Paul's saying is, we have that has its counterpart in our meeting as well. And that is that we should observe it, not with literal unleavened bread, for as a matter of fact, there's an excellent case to be made that not only did the Lord use leavened bread, but that we should prefer leavened bread in any case. But that's another subject. But rather, that we should hold the festival not with the old leaven of malice and evil, from which we have been called away by the gospel, but the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And what he's talking about there is the attitude that we bring to the morning meeting. So, as I say at the outset, it's a question of attitude. And since the memorial meeting is, in a sense, the focus of our worship together, then I've begun this discussion by focusing for a moment upon that aspect of our worship together. Now, you see, the fact that the apostle has raised this question implies the very real possibility, indeed the danger, that we may fall into a trap in this respect. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been any need for him to raise the question. If this weren't an issue, then why raise it? He has raised it, therefore it's an issue. And you see that if you pursue other places in Scripture, this is very much a matter of concern for us. And we need to look inside ourselves, to examine ourselves, come to terms with all the things which make us kind of bitter and twisted, if you know what I mean, towards ourselves, towards our brothers and sisters, indeed sometimes towards God, because we don't really make sense of what he's done in our lives and the lives of those who are near and dear to us, and somehow or other come to terms with that and avoid the bitter jealousy, the selfish ambition, the boasting, the falseness to the truth, all of which, as you can see from that a quotation from James, are not appropriate. And so it goes on, speaking the truth in love. Several people have said that they have been interested in this series that I've been talking about because it has been candid and it has been truthful. And that's interested me a little bit. The inference to be drawn from that is that we can sometimes take the position that I'm taking now and be less than candid and less than truthful with each other. And as soon as you do that, you create a kind of a barrier, you know. There is this... this reserve which we hold back from each other. Actually, the business of being open and honest with each other requires a bit of courage, and you know that, because as soon as you lay yourself open to others, you make yourself vulnerable. You are trusting them not to take advantage of that which you have laid before them, if you know what I mean, your soul, you bear your soul or whatever it is. And somehow or other, it seems to me that in our ecclesial activities, we need to be able to develop this kind of honesty with ourselves, honesty with God, but also honesty with our brothers and sisters, so that we can indeed embrace each other in the spirit, if you understand me, and share what is in our hearts. Of course, you can't share what's in your heart with another unless you are prepared to reveal what's in your heart. And so this business of truth, you know, speaking the truth in love. Oh, we're not talking about a bunch of doctrines here. We're talking about who we are, what we are, and how we relate to each other, if you see what I'm suggesting. So this matter of ecclesial life is a very real challenge to us, isn't it? And there are a bunch of things in here that we really need to think about. Well, as I say, I've got two pages of this, and we could go through it, and it could well be profitable, but if we were to do that, we wouldn't raise anything else. And as usual, this is a kind of theoretical thing, and I'm just raising it just to sort of set the scene somewhat, to paint in a background against which we will have some some practical discussion. I hope it will be practical in any case. And so I revert once again for the first point of discussion to the comment made by the little girl in our meeting about her dad who stayed away from the meeting because he had the sneezes that morning, and he was lucky because he could watch TV, he didn't have to go to the meeting. I think in my lifetime I've been away from the meeting about half a dozen times, and maybe I haven't counted exactly, because I've been sick. I mean, I've really been genuinely ill, and too ill to get up and go to the meeting, and just physically not up to it. And here's one of these times when I'm going to be quite honest to you, with you. I've lain in my bed and I thought, gee, I don't have to go to the meeting today. I felt a bit like a child who has had an unexpected holiday granted him from school, you know? You know what I'm talking about? You've been down that track? Okay. Well, just the realization of that, and to just stop and pick that up and play with it for a little while and just think about it for ourselves. I'm not going to do it for you. You've got to do it for yourself. But I have used that experience. It's a rare experience, but I've used that experience to measure my real attitude towards the Lord and the things of the Lord and the things which we are doing in our meeting, and just use it just to, well, examine yourself, you know, as Paul says in relation to the breaking of bread. It's kind of an interesting idea, isn't it? There's a story goes with it too. The little girl was one story, but the other story is this one about the couple of fellows who weren't Christadelphians. They went fishing on a Sunday morning, a beautiful Sunday morning, and they're out on a lake. It must have been somewhere in North America, and they're out fishing, and they've got the poles over the side of it, and as they're fishing there, they hear the church bells, you know, calling the faithful to worship. And one of them, his conscience smites him, he says, we really ought to be at church this morning. And the other guy says, nah, he says, I couldn't go anyway. He says, my wife's a crook, I had to stay home and look after her. And that kind of reveals somewhat the attitude that sometimes we might even actually feel in ourselves. And I've just sometimes picked that up. I've identified it myself, first of all, and I've noticed it with others. So we stay away for a variety of reasons. Sometimes we're not there. And the question is, why don't we attend if we are feeling just a little bit slack about the meeting? Now, I'm not talking just about the memorial meeting, because by and large, if we're going to attend anything, we attend the memorial meeting, don't we? There are all kinds of reasons why people stay away. First of all, the sickness thing that we've already discussed. Sometimes work. That's becoming an increasing problem, and I hesitate to say very much about it because it's never been an issue for me. I've always been, you know, a school teacher that could quit at 3:30 on Friday and didn't have to think about it too seriously until 8:30 on Monday. So far be it from me. I mean, who am I to say you better not work on Sunday? You know, actually, in our meeting, we have some whose economic situation is such that they can only take jobs which involve work on Sunday, and we set up rosters for people to go and visit them to break bread with them. And we also even say to them, look, for those of us who work from Friday to Monday, it really doesn't matter whether we hold the meeting on at 10:30 on Sunday morning, whether we hold it on Saturday night. If you prefer, we will hold our meeting at a time which will suit you. If you have to work on Sunday morning, that's fine. So nothing magic about Sunday. It's a convention. It's a convenient convention. It's been going around since the first century. But there's nothing sacrosanct about the day, and we can be flexible about it. And in ecclesias of a small enough size, that flexibility is easy to arrange. It would be difficult in a larger meeting. We live too far from the meeting. We have in our experience known of a young couple who lived in our town, were members of our ecclesia, and for various reasons they took it into their heads that they would like to live out of town, so they went and bought a sort of a hobby farm arrangement half an hour's drive from Whanganui. And they said, well, it's only half an hour's drive, we'll come in and we'll attend the Sunday school, bring the kids to the Sunday school, You know, arranging brother, speaking brother, and involved in Sunday school and all the rest of it. That's fine. No problem. We said, are you sure about that? Half an hour's drive isn't very much, but in a small place it comes to a fair bit. Where we live in a town where you can get to anywhere in 5 minutes. So half an hour is practically at the other end of the world. Well, the regime lasted about 2 or 3 months, and gradually it's drifted and drifted, and now there's no sign. And we have to actually take the ecclesia there. The point that I'm making, I'm just using this to illustrate this point, is sometimes we can make wiser choices about where we choose to live. Often we will rationalize the reason we will make decisions like that and say, well, it'll be better for the children to have more space to run around, or there's less pressure, or it's the housing is cheaper. There are 1,001 reasons that we find, but there are reasons and reasons, and there are lots of examples of this sort of thing in scripture. I think of Heber the Kenite, you know, and you know, a jail, and the fact that he'd moved away from the place where his roots were in Judah, in the high country of Judah, to the lush area in the valley of Esdraelon. And there has to only be one reason for that, or perhaps two. One would be economic, because the living was easier. The other was perhaps he didn't much care for the high spiritual standard of living where he was, and he would prefer to have a more laid-back lifestyle. Kind of dangerous thing, and it can lead to difficulties, practical difficulties. This is another reason why some people stay away. They have relatives who are not in the truth who come to stay for the weekend. You figure out how you feel about that, but should we put their interest before the interest of the Lord? Would it not perhaps be better and wiser for us to simply explain our situation and say, well, now you're welcome to come along. Can't break bread when you're with us, but you can come along. You're welcome to come. And if you feel uncomfortable, well, then by all means stay home and we'll go. It seems to me that we do more service to ourselves and for the truth by simply sticking to our routines, especially when there are children in that family and see that kind of stuff going on. When because there are relatives who are not in the truth come to visit, it happens, that's fine, but I think we need to think pretty much about that. There are those who stay away by saying, I'm not in the right frame of mind, I wouldn't get anything out of it anyway. And there are several stories that go with that, but basically what happens is you take the first step and you make the first move, then you are going to get something out of it, as long as you're prepared to put something into it, as I suggested before. As far as lectures are concerned, there are people who stay away from lectures for lots of reasons. Some of them are really genuine reasons. Some are. I mean, clearly, if you have a young family, you can't necessarily take them out, and so one stays home. Coral and I always worked it so that one of us was there. And so sometimes I would stay at home and look after the children, and sometimes she would. But one of us would be there, and we felt that it was important that our family be represented at every time the hall door is open. You know, if the question arises for us, if we're going to be servants of the Lord, we're going to be members of the Ecclesia, when should we attend? The answer is we should attend when the door is open, whatever's going on. And unless we do that, we're going to weaken the hands of those who have to carry the heat and burden of the day. Now, you may feel that you don't have a heap of a lot to contribute at business meetings and things of that sort, and that might be right, but still, by being there, you do strengthen the hands. And just remember the story, Moses' reaction to the 2.5 tribes when they said, let us stay here, we won't cross over the Jordan. Actually, I think Moses kind of assumed that they weren't going to. There isn't any actual evidence in there that they didn't intend to fulfill their obligations. And I think there's an excellent case to be made that they fully intended to, but Moses, in his reaction, broke into their discussion before they had time to fully express themselves. But that's not important. The main thing is that he had a point. His point was that if you don't support the work of the truth in whatever shape or form it is, then you are weakening the hands of those who do. And furthermore, there's a second point. The point is this, that if you don't like what's going on there and you don't attend, then nobody's going to listen to word one when you start to complain. If you want to see things changed, there's only one way to do it. That is, get involved and be part of it. And then people are going to want to know what you think about it. And you have an opportunity to change things for the better. And it isn't good enough to just say, I don't like what's going on. And because unless you can put up something better, then just knocking it is no good. You know what I mean? Now, I hope I'm not being too strong in this, but having been recording Brother in our meeting for more years than I can... I don't know exactly how long, it's 20-plus years, whatever. I have copped a few of these complaints once or twice, and I get just a little bit tetchy about it, you know. Just a little bit. Bible class is a bore. Subjects don't interest me. Actually, you know, there's a whole thing going on here in the world that we are heir to some extent, and there's a trivialization of things, you know. The Bible class is an opportunity to get into the Word in a little bit more depth. And it may be that our brother has got a pet crotchet and he's, you know, going to go down a track and he's not going to explain it very well and it's dead boring. It may be. But you'll always have an opportunity for a bit of discussion. And if you know that he's going to come up with this thing again, then get into the Word and find something. There's always something to say about the subject, and get something figured out before you go along. And pick it up. And you'll find that will encourage him too, because he will be measuring himself against that. And always go for standards of excellence. Try to raise the tone. That's the key to it, as it seems to me. Be positive. Be constructive. Standing back and saying, I don't like this, and that's not working. Well, anybody can see that. But think of something better to do. And that's a challenge. And an important one, as it seems to me. So there are a whole lot of things there for us to think about. Why we don't attend. Actually, I think it must be a very unusual person who doesn't lose the plot to some extent one way or at one time or another. We all lose it from time to time. What are the causes? Well, once again, if you stop and think about what's fundamentally happening when we begin to goof off, as we say, or our minds drift away from the truth, what actually is going on? And I've thought about this a little bit, and for myself, I've looked inside myself. The things which are going on about me is that, with me, is that I cease to think about the real value of the truth. Familiarity has bred a variety of contempt. Other things get to the top of our priority list. All right? There's a bit of a story about priorities. You know, Coral disagrees with me over this, but I believe that we are always doing, at any given time, the thing which is most important to us. I had a delightful seventh form student taking physics, and I said to her one morning, I can't remember her name, it wasn't Meryl, no, that was just a... For a moment I thought it was Meryl, but then I thought, no, it wasn't Meryl. She was sitting right in front of me, and I was going around the class, homework. I'd set an important task for them to do. If they'd done it, they would have been prepared for the lesson for the day. They would have understood an aspect of the physics that I was trying to put across at the time. And I set this homework problem, and I said, this is going to be challenging for you, but if you attack it like this and that, you should be able to come to a conclusion. And in the process, you're going to learn something. And so I went around the class, you know, homework. No, I didn't do it. The next one, homework, didn't do it. I tell you, this education system in New Zealand's falling apart. The seams. Seventh formers going, you know, for university work, and they don't do their homework. And I come to this girl, this lovely girl, sitting in front of me, and I said to her, your homework. I can't remember her name now. And she said, I didn't do it. And by this time, I was getting kind of irritated. And I said to her, you didn't do your physics homework. What did you do last night? She said, I went out training for athletics. Uh-huh. So athletics is more important than physics? No. Come on. You had a choice. You do physics or you do training for athletics. Now, which is it? What did you do? Training for athletics. Don't tell me that training for athletics is not more important than physics. Because if physics was more important, you would have done it. You'd do what you had to do it. And she said, and I think Coral thinks that that's a bit unreasonable, because there's lots of things that we do because we have to do them. And she argues that therefore they're not necessarily the most important things to us. But my own argument is far more fundamental. If you are doing it, far more fundamental. If you are doing it, then it's because that is important to you at that moment. Now, you may not like having to do it. You may prefer to do 1,001 other things, but you're going to do what's most important to you at any given moment. And if we want to get into the kingdom, if we want to support the ecclesia, that's what we'll do. You know, if you want to go overseas, you've got to get a visa, you've got to get a passport, you've got to get the tickets, you've got to have the money in your pocket, you've got to do 101 things. Now, you want to go overseas, you want to get take a ride on an aeroplane? Try doing it without all of those things and see how far you get. It won't work. And what happens? I tell you, it is a real problem organising an itinerary. It is a problem finding the money to pay for the tickets. It's a nuisance getting the passports. The visas are nothing but a confounded pest. Right? But if you want to go from New Zealand to South Africa, you do it. You know? So it is with the things of the kingdom. Brother Bob Lloyd is famous for saying, if you want to be in the kingdom, then you will be there. If you really want to be there, you will be there. And the same is true for ecclesial life. It's true, isn't it? Priorities, that's what it is. So this business of the priority list, what's at the top of our priority list? And the problem is, of course, that we can put the ecclesia at the top of our priority list, and it then becomes a kind of a mechanical thing which we do week by week by week, and we cease to think of it as being a priority. It just becomes a mechanical thing, and then gradually other things will come in, and after a little while we'll resent the fact that we have got the ecclesia at the automatic top of our priority list, and we will start to do it with an unwilling spirit and kind of this sort of, look, I'm telling you what I've found for myself, you know, it's the way it goes. So in a simple or a complex way, we fail to see God's perspective as supreme, and that to me is a bit of an issue too. Now, there's all kinds of shades in this, and you perhaps take out of those words your own particular interpretation, but in effect we cease to see the Bible point of view as being true and authoritative, and that is constantly being challenged all the time. The Bible point of view is constantly challenged in the world that we live in, and you pick it up. It comes at you in a whole bunch of subtle ways, and it has its effect, right? At some point we fail to properly attend to. Now, we may do our readings, we may do our prayers, offer our prayers, we may get involved in fellowship and in constructive spiritual activity, but we fail to attend to them. And it is the passage of time which is the problem, the creeping negligence which kills us stone dead from time to time. No simple answers. I don't know what the answer is, except every now and again to just stop and reflect and measure ourselves against the standards that we know that the Word has set, and the unbelievable example of our Lord. Yeah. And then, of course, there are also personal problems, whatever they may be, and they tend to take over, and there's no way you can avoid that, and they're frequently brought by the Lord just simply as a means of getting us to actually reset. You know, when a computer program starts to fall over and the machine locks up, you can quit the application, but you fear that there's bits and pieces hanging out there, they're going to come back and get you later on. And so what you do, if you're wise, is you say, save what I can now and hit the hot boot and reset. You know? Bong! The thing starts up again and it goes through its bit and you come up with a clean sheet. Every now and again I think we need to reset. You know? Just to just stop and look at what's going on in our lives and you know, sort of get this straightened up. And these personal problems are the means by which the Lord gets us to hit the hot boot button, in effect. It makes you stop and think, and you reflect on your life and redirect if necessary. And this is tremendous, as it seems to me, very important. There is this problem of that we mentioned before, why we don't attend, why people getting bored with what's going on. Let me read a letter which I was delighted to read in the June 1996 Christadelphian, addressed to Brother Michael Ashton, of course. It's written by Brother Tom McCarthy of Newport. And he says this: with regard to Brother Vaughan Rowland's comments on attendance at meetings and criticisms of speakers, subjects, etc., in the May 1996 Christadelphian, may I make the following supportive comments. When, as a Roman Catholic, I first attended Christadelphian lectures, I felt every speaker was wonderful, every lecture was grand. Why? Because the scriptures were being opened up and a mind full of no truth theology and mystique was being enlightened. Those who attended these lectures were giving their added testimony to the truth of God by the very fact that they were there. The quality of the speaker was of little account. Truth was all. I recall a beloved sister, now long asleep, telling me that when a great crisis entered her life, she was angry with God. How could he repay her loyal service and dedication so? She presented herself before him on the following Sunday, not really wishing to be there. When she saw who the exhorting brother was, she felt worse. Her most unfavourite speaker. That speaker, completely unaware of her trauma, gave an exhortation in which she heard just what she needed to hear. And by the time he'd finished his remarks, the healing process of a wounded sister had started. Is not 1 Thessalonians 5:19 appropriate here, says Brother Tom McCarthy. There's a story told of how during the last war a young American soldier approached a general and stated that he was dissatisfied with waiting around and was not making his contribution. The general replied, "Son, the army may never need you. If it does, it may need only 4 minutes of your time. The important thing is to be there." We're members of the body of Christ and exist for the benefit of the larger whole. Personal preferences, moans, complaints and so forth are of no consequence, says Brother Tom McCarthy. The important thing is to be there. I no longer find that every speaker is wonderful or every lecturer is grand, he says. It does not matter. Somebody else may find it so. It's been well said that grace is given on trust and for the benefit of others. The important thing is to be there. Finally, have the critics ever thought of how many boring and unhelpful addresses the Lord Jesus had to sit through until the time came for him to go forth and astonish all with the authority of his teaching? We shall never know what he went through, but whenever synagogue or holy day beckoned, there can be no doubt he was there. Sincerely, your brother, Tom Grace. I found that kind of moving, really. It sort of encapsulated the way that I felt about it. And of course, I had no part of that discussion. I just picked it out of the air, so to speak. Fantastic. So there it is, some of the things which we need to talk about. Generalizations. Here are a couple of my wild, sweeping statements. When individuals get into difficulty in their ecclesial lives, and by that I mean poor attendance, negative attitudes, neglected duties, presiding brother who simply doesn't show, you know, you think he's going to be there, he's on the roster, he was announced last Sunday, he was there when the announcement was made, Sunday comes around, he's just not there. And you have a bit of a scurry around to go and do it. Of course, Now, I've learned as a recording brother, what I do is I get on the phone and I make sure he's there. And everybody else too. Well, okay, I had to learn too from that. When individuals get into difficulty with their ecclesial lives, then as a generalization, their private spiritual lives are probably in trouble. Okay? So if you're going to contribute to the ecclesia, you have to keep your own personal spiritual life in shape. And that shifts the responsibility back where it belongs. Of course, the flip side of that, which I haven't discussed, is the converse, and that is if you get your private spiritual life into shape, then you're going to just automatically be qualified to contribute to the ecclesia in a constructive kind of way. I haven't written the corollary up there, but it follows. This is one of those cases where, you know, you can't say, for example, that all dogs have tails and therefore all tails have dogs, but in this case you can. This particular dog has got a tail and the tail has got a dog, and that's important. Right? By the time they're obvious to others, our problems are usually pretty serious, and we've had lots of examples of that in our experience. You just don't know what's going on in the minds of brethren and sisters sometimes, and that, you know, suddenly the place falls apart, and that's a shame, which means that there is even greater responsibility on us as individuals to get it right as far as we are able under the good hand of our God. Right? An ecclesia which isn't functioning as it ought is probably made up of individuals who are not functioning as they ought. And that, I suppose, is a kind of a corollary to the first one. And we owe it to our brethren then to stay focused on the truth. Those generalizations I have found a little helpful. And when problems arise, we look for solutions. Sometimes there aren't any. Monitoring programs I think in South Africa there's more of this goes on than in many other places, but here I have collected quite a number, including some South African solutions. Monitoring programs to keep an eye and give help to at-risk individuals and families in the ecclesia, not that we take over their lives, and this is a kind of very difficult area and one where I walk on eggshells for myself. Because there is this fine line, you know, between help and taking over, and people, we mustn't absolutely depend on each other as individuals. We have to learn to depend upon the Lord and to develop within ourselves the abilities to gain the spirit and the faith and the inspiration from the Lord himself. And these monitoring programs, or whatever else they might be, are intended to actually help the individual who is having difficulties to develop that. Now, too often, it becomes like the sort of archetypical American shrink arrangement. You know, the people, they can't function unless they have their weekly fix of the shrink or whatever. And we must be careful to avoid that. Monitoring carries its own risks. I mean, what I've talked about with at-risk individuals and monitoring programs, it may only work in large meetings, because you see, in small meetings it's practically impossible not to be part of the problem, because in a small meeting the interaction is that much tighter. See, in a big meeting you can go off, I suppose, I mean, we lived in a big meeting for a while, it is perfectly possible to go off into a corner and run your own sort of sub-ecclesia within the ecclesia, if you know what I mean. You have a clique, you have a group of close people with whom you naturally communicate and you have to do more with. Now, in a small meeting you can't afford that luxury. It just doesn't work that way, and people who try it generally finish up wrecking the meeting or making it very uncomfortable for everybody else. So this business of monitoring, you know, may only work in large meetings. It's difficult not to be part of the problem in a small meeting. Monitoring carries its own risks, and let me tell you, they're serious risks. We've seen some terrible things, you know, come apart. Actually, in our meeting, as a matter of fact, we didn't actually know the monitoring was going on. It was an informal arrangement, but it finished up in disaster for two families. And so it's made me personally a bit cautious about it. Many ecclesias run marriage guidance sessions for those about to marry. Very wise. There's something funny going on with marriage in the world today. Something really weird going on. And marriage is becoming something which needs very careful preparation. Far more, I mean, we prepared for marriage in our time. How long ago was it? 150 years ago or something, when the car. By talking constantly about the things which we had in common, and that was the truth, and how we were going to use our time together in the truth, and so on, you know. And this business of marriage guidance is very important, and I really don't want to say any more about it because I'm so thoroughly unqualified. There is in Los Angeles one ecclesia that actually employs a professional counsellor. Now, they drew up a list of about 150 counsellors from the Yellow Pages, and they set a team of brethren to work to interview them. They were having so many problems in personal relationships and so on in their ecclesia, and they finished up with a short list, and they had some very stringent qualifications, and they finished up with a short list of half a dozen, and they interviewed them in length. They got the whole ecclesia together and got these people in, and they grilled them more or less, and they selected one out of that, and they employ this person, and the ecclesia picks up the tab. And a person who feels that they need some kind of disinterested help, you'll notice the word disinterested is different from uninterested. Disinterested means that you just stand back, hands off, at arm's length kind of thing. A person who feels that they need some sort of disinterested help can then just make an appointment with this person, go along and have a chat, and the ecclesia picks up the tab. A radical idea, and I must say, when I first heard it, I thought, whoa, what is this, you know? But they report very favourably about the results. They say that it's actually done some good. You see, the ecclesia is very closely knit, and this business of being so closely knit, you really become part of the problem. You know, there's a theorem in physics that says that you can't make a measurement without altering that which you're measuring, and that's true. And when you look at the ecclesial life, well, then you can see that this is what they had in mind. Anyway, there are phone-in care groups. They've tried that in New Zealand. It's sort of worked. But it hasn't, in my experience or what my knowledge of it, it hasn't worked as well as it might have. And I know that they do a similar thing in the UK, but I don't have any details. Brother John may be able to say something about it. Whatever, we oughtn't just to walk away from the problems. And when we see brothers and sisters in trouble, then it's no time to walk away. Let's determine to stay close to one another then. Song. It wasn't the singing, it was the words which were important. So think about the words. A degree of moderation. I was once went along to a Pentecostal meeting to just see what was going on there, and I was very interested because they say that we haven't got the spirit in our worship, all right, and we're kind of formal and legalistic and all the rest of it. I went along, I watched them, and they were clapping their hands and singing and dancing and doing all that sort of stuff with an air of detachment which would have made most Christadelphians feel ashamed, you know. I mean, they weren't really any more involved in it than what we are, you know. It was the same old problem. Too much sometimes can take away the edge, the understanding, the perception of what's going on. Brother Alfred Nichols once raised a point with me in conversation. We were in a bus travelling together with a bunch of young people, and we had hymn books there, and we were singing the hymns as a kind of a recreational activity, which I thought was good. And he said, well, he said, I wonder, should we actually use our hymns that way? I don't know the answer to that. He had a point of view. He was saying, in some respects, he was implying, perhaps that it may perhaps trivialise them or encourage us not to actually think of them as modes of worship, but just as a vehicle of social intercourse, in a sense. Well, that was a point of view for you to think about too. I don't know what the answer is. Perhaps there's a balance, as in a lot of these things. When we offer prayers, communal prayers, there are a number of things which I think we could benefit from thinking about. First of all, our prayers ought to be to the point and concise. There's no point in... Sometimes you get the impression that the brother sort of sets a stopwatch and he has to go for 5 minutes and 33 seconds precisely. And so he's got to find something to say for that length of time. I hope I don't, that's not offensive to say that. I don't intend to be. But I sometimes think that we would do well to just sit and consider what exactly do we want to say and then just get on and say it. And when we've said it, to cease. That's one thing. I think that prayers ought to be prepared and not just done off the cuff. And I haven't got time now to talk about preparation. Preparation to me is a very important thing. I think we need to at least to have thought about what we want to say. Not the words necessarily, not necessarily have learned up the words in our minds, but have the feeling of what we want to convey on behalf of our brothers and sisters if we're involved in these sorts of things. And feeling appropriate to the occasion. New Zealanders are a very reserved bunch. They don't find it easy to sort of, you know, be close and warm and use emotional terms and so on. But feeling is important, and we need to think about what we're doing. Clichés and overused words. We have one word which crops up in prayers in our meeting that drives me just about nuts, because it, about four times in a sentence we get the word indeed, you know, and after a while it becomes distracting. We had a brother in a meeting that we used to belong to whose pet phrase was our Heavenly Father, and it's right and it's proper and it can be used, but he used it. One brother got to actually counting it, and he, in one prayer for the bread or the wine or something like that, he came up and he said, well, I heard that 35 times in that one short prayer, you see. And it really does get distracting. A lot of these things are nervous reactions. I'm subject to them too. You will probably find me saying and ah quite a lot, and I'm not aware of it when I'm standing here. When I listen to the tapes, I'm horrified. I don't listen to my tapes. I mean, the last thing, please don't give me a copy of the tapes of these sessions, you know, because I can't stand it. I listen to it, I think, oh, you know. We're not aware of our idiosyncrasies. That's the point that I'm making. Others are, and sometimes it's very useful to have a wife. She's written it down already. She holds up the piece of paper and shows it to me. I'm going to get to you afterwards, she says. All right. So there you go. That's for prayer. Singing and prayer. And the one that I wanted to talk about was the children. And even if I don't get any more through than this, let's just discuss the children briefly. Where do the children fit in? Seems to me that as we get older, we have to resist the temptation to, or our impatience with the children in our meeting. Somebody came into our meeting a little while ago. It's a bit like the Westville meeting. And Sunday school was just coming out, and somebody, a visitor, came in and said, coming into your meeting is like walking through long grass. They were met by a torrent of children coming out from Sunday school. Delightful, really. We had a couple in our meeting who for quite a long time tried to legislate. Come along to every business meeting and they would say, we need a rule, no children in the meeting hall during the meeting because they're just too noisy, it's impossible. We need a rule. Let's write a scribes and Pharisees rule and we'll settle this issue. Alright? Well, the Ecclesia wisely resisted this. We have two crying rooms. Crying rooms, do you have crying rooms in South Africa? Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? I've often thought about it. We've got glass door on one of our crying rooms, and on there is a placard saying crying room. And I seriously wonder what the meter reader who comes around to read the meter and the, what he thinks about our Ecclesia. Such a distressing business, isn't it? Yeah. Well, we have two crying rooms with closed circuit television and good sound and that sort of thing, and the couples are encouraged to take them out. Now, one thing that's interesting is that this particular couple that wanted the legislation, they are grandchildren. Oh, it was amazing. Just astonishing. Suddenly there was a complete understanding of what was going on here, you know? And the grandmother, who had been fussing about the noise of the children, she would then take one of the grandchildren out to one of the creches, and the mother would take one of the others, and they worked with it, you see. And there is a single sister in our meeting, coming on elderly, and she actually makes that one of her activities of contribution to the truth. She looks at the row of little kids. Dad's already taken one kid out, And mum's now got two more kids to deal with, and one starts fussing, and she's got all the paraphernalia and the equipment. How's she going to cope with this, you know? So the sister steps forward and says, you know, go out. She takes the place and looks after the third child, who, while the mother takes the second child out. You see what I mean? Oh, good point to think about, isn't it? So this is the way that it works. Of course, parents need to use a bit of wisdom too. We had one parent who had a somewhat lively child, and that's giving him the best of it, who would come to the meeting with a truck, great big metal truck, and he would play with this thing, and when you pushed it, it made loud whirring sounds, but these weren't enough. It was physically impossible to operate that thing satisfactorily without loud vocal noises to go with it. Well, I mean, obviously this wasn't any good, so they took it away from him, and then the vocal noises were really loud, let me tell you. And she would spend most of her time shushing this guy, when in stage whisper shushes, you know, and he would make an odd squeak, and she'd shh, like this, you see. And her shushes were about four times louder than his noise. Well, they had to be, because otherwise he wouldn't hear it, shushing him. And of course, this just raised his volume a little bit so he could get over the noise that she was making. It was really very interesting to sit down at the front and imagine what's going on. And in the end, this guy would object so strongly, this little fellow, that the father would pick him up on one hand, clamp his hand over his face with the other one, cart him out, you see. And you'd hear him disappearing into the distance. Fascinating stuff in the middle of an exhibition, let me tell you. He'd get outside, and the hand would come off the face and would usually get applied someplace else with vigour. And then, of course, well, you know, I mean, kind of breaks the tension a little bit, doesn't it? Interesting. So, obviously, the activities have to be suitable. Who was talking about the domino effect this morning? We actually have had the domino effect in our meeting, where the kids, you've got a block, a row of dominoes, they set them up, and they're... And the last one falls on the floor, and the others too, you know how it goes. So Robert Roberts had a solution. I'd just like to read this to you, and I really will stop, Roy. I've got more of this about children, but enough already. Let's just read Robert Roberts. Sunday, April 12th, 1896. The reason for reading this is it's not a new problem. Met with the Adelaide Brethren. Anybody know where Adelaide is? Oh yes, you've heard of it, right. Met with the Adelaide Brethren in their place of meeting for the breaking of bread, a large and pleasant meeting. This is 102 years ago. Addressed them on the reality, truth and excellence of our hope. Children a little too prominent. Cannot be helped, perhaps, but perhaps it can. Sunday school is the place for children. If there's no Sunday school, then home. And if the parents cannot leave them at home by reason of having been to absent themselves, then let them be placed away behind so that the object of the meeting may not be interfered with. The object is spiritual exercise, deep and impressive. The movements and sounds of children are as destructive of this as the admission of light rays into a camera are destructive of the forming photographic image. There's a right and dear place for the children, as there is for everything else. Out of this place, they're liable to be, well, not acceptable when they might be delightful. Parental authority is the first requisite, and then wise arrangements. Things might be worse, but it would be well to have them better by the rule that no children in arms are eligible in meetings held for spiritual purposes, and no children out of arms either, unless they're under control and as much out of sight as may be. Enough. In the evening, there was a crowded audience, brethren's meeting place, to hear of the powerless position of the papacy as a sign of the nearness of the Lord. Things haven't changed a whole lot, have they, in 102 years? Personally, I agree with Brother Roberts and I disagree with him. I agree with the notion that we need to keep this in perspective, but I disagree that I think the children should be there. Suffer the little children to come unto me, and I think that's very, very real and very important. And as much as possible, to enter into the spirit of what's going on. And incidentally, if I may, Brother Ronnie, just completely off the top of my head, and you can see that off the top of my head there's nothing much up there, I wonder, what is going on in our ecclesias that children are not encouraged to sing the hymn for the memorial meeting and the memorial and that? I'm not sure that there is a very good reason why they shouldn't, participate fully in that respect. I know they don't break bread and drink wine, and I've never understood this. Something that's just grown up in the last few years. And the problem is, that at least in New Zealand, it's increasingly difficult to get the children to sing the hymns at all. And as far as we are concerned with our children, we have tried to encourage them to sing the hymns altogether. Now, I remember before I was baptised singing the hymn for the memorial and understanding that I wasn't able to participate in the thing with the fullness that I could if I were baptised. I understood that as I sang it, and I made the mental adjustment to the words as I went through. Not that I changed the words, but I shifted my point of view, my position over it. I understood that. But the participation was itself a binding effect on me, and it pulled me closer to it, and an encouragement that I should correct this anomaly in my position. Now, maybe other children are quite as introspective as I was, but I think that it's something to think about. And I'm tossing it out now for you to discuss amongst yourselves. By all means, take me to task over it, but I've thought about it. I can't see any compelling reason why the children shouldn't be involved as fully as possible. And I've thrown my notes away. There's still another 10 pages of it. Thank you very much.